This is just like part of that club that no one else belongs to. It's like there's a group of people that, you know, are playing chess with the rest of the planet, and we're just reading about it.
We assume that the government operates in some sort of unison, that this executive order's passed, that everyone in the federal government's going to abide by it, and here we are.
I would say if you're a customer, you're part of an open source project with Ledger. And if you've never been a developer but wanted to work on an open source project, all you had to do is be a customer.
This is your life. You need to protect it because the systems that are put in place are not doing that for you. They were never designed for that purpose.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Greer and Tony with me. Guys, crazy week of news. Let's first talk, of course, about Venezuela. So the U.S. basically just kidnapped the Venezuelan president, Maduro. And it says in the Kobayashi letter, the plot thickens. While Venezuela holds 303 billion barrels of oil reserves, much of this is heavy. Oh, by the way, obviously this is not about oil. It's about, you know, drug trafficking and that. But, you know, 303 billion barrels of oil reserves. Much of it is heavy crude. Texas and Louisiana also happen to have six of the largest heavy crude oil refineries in the world. All righty, Tony, interesting times. I would love to hear your take on what's going on in Venezuela. Obviously, there's a sort of a haze around what's going on in Venezuela, but what's your reaction to all of this? And what's the warning you might give to people as they think about it?
Man, you should be happy. You know, like a big part of your drug problem, I guess, is now has been resolved with with this unexpected Christmas present that you got. But at the same time, you know, it must have been an upsetting message for Russia and China to learn that, you know, coincidentally, at the same time, you know, they got their hands on so much oil reserves, you know, to sort of like, you know, compromise or, you know, put like a stick in Russia and China's plans for oil domination. Man, this is just like part of that club that no one else belongs to. It's like literally, you know, there's a group of people that, you know, are playing chess with the rest of the planet, and we're just reading about it. You know, like we are like the non-participating players that have to deal with the consequences of all of these strategic action, so to speak. I don't know how this plays out, man, but I mean, you know, for every action, there's a reaction, right? And it's like, whether it's good or bad, that's yet to be seen. But this, you know, I don't know. I don't want to speculate on this, but let's see how this plays out.
So Greer, I'm actually going to move to the next story and let you comment on both at the same time, because additionally, besides obviously a lot of refineries in the U.S., the DOD and JP Morgan went into business together to build a new metal smelting facility in the U.S. My understanding is that goes live and operational in 2029, but it's going to handle silver and other critical minerals. And so they basically, the thesis here is they took over, or they are taking over, some of these mining operations in Venezuela, and that's how they're going to divert these precious metals, these resources from China and Russia exiting Venezuela into the U.S., and it's going to basically fund their raw materials. So we've got two stories very much related in my view. I would love to hear your take on both.
I guess we were all wrong about the dollar collapsing. You know, that's the thing that to me comes out of this. It's the empire striking back and saying that we are going to make sure that oil is priced in dollars. And we now control a huge portion of the world's supply. The same is true with the metals and all the rare earths that are coming out of Venezuela, that now the U.S., through this kind of corporate communism, the elites get to control. And if we thought the dollar was going away, I think we've just been given sort of a surprise. And $17 trillion of oil really makes our $38 trillion in debt look a different way this morning. I think the most sort of amusing part is that nobody seems to know where they should stand on the issue of Venezuela. I've seen more people on the left and right agree that it was immoral or wrong, but then I've also seen people from both sides, you know, talk about the humanitarian crisis that will be resolved now that Maduro is no longer in power, or how the U.S. is going to take over the Western Hemisphere. So this one is just an absolutely fantastic way to start 2026. prepare for chaos. We have no idea the future that's going to unfold. And I think, you know, if you're like me, we're just sort of holding on for dear life, wondering what's going to happen next. I think that we'll continue to see the U.S. expand its footprint. You know, there's talks of Greenland, Canada. You know, if you're on our side of the world, look out, because there is a big bully that I think everybody thought was just going to go quietly into the night. And Trump is making clear that we are, you know, the dollar has a future. So take with that what you will. I think Bitcoin is the best way to opt out of this, but I think it's also sort of naive to ignore the reality.
I think that's well said. I'll give you my take, because I agree. It's interesting to see people on both sides agreeing at times and then everyone disagreeing in unison about other things. My take is that I understand. My impression is, I don't know what to believe, obviously, in the media anymore. My impression is there is a humanitarian crisis, or has been, in Venezuela. That said, I believe it is completely unconstitutional. Our founding fathers would not have opted for a federal intervention like this in a country abroad unless first attacked. So I am, while I appreciate that there is a need for humanitarian aid, I'm not in favor of governments making that determination, and certainly not using military intervention to do so. And then, Tony, on top of that, so you mentioned the big club that we're not a part of. You didn't even get a chance to comment on the JP Morgan story. So I think what it is, they're financing an $8 billion smelting facility is what it amounts to. I've seen sort of different reports. They were short silver, and so they were screwed. This could be like a lifeline, but then maybe somehow they were able to reverse out of that here in the last couple of weeks. Either way, though, it's like sweetheart deals for exactly the players that you would expect. So any comment on that before we move on?
The thing is, I'm not sure how much you're going to extend the lifeline of the dollar with something like this, because I don't think any of this is going to slow down the abusive spending. I don't think any of this is going to slow down the debasement of the dollar. I don't think any of this is going to stop or slow down the de-dollarization, you know, that's happening globally. And one important thing about all of this, like, if you think you're going to go out and, you know, plunder and pillage, and, you know, at some point none of this is going to come back and visit you at home, you're delusional. This is very dangerous. You know, as far as I can tell, you know, there's people celebrating this for whatever reasons, but because, you know, I think they're taking a very myopic view of this specific event. But this is these situations usually have ripple effects, and in this case, you know, especially in the, you know, at the time that we're in these days, I don't think this is something that's going to just go unnoticed. I think there's going to be repercussions to this. What they are, I have no idea. But living in, you know, in 2026, you know, after witnessing, you know, the expiration of an entire monetary system, I think this ties into it at some level. But I don't think this is good news to anyone.
I think I can see both of your perspectives. I think that, Greer, I agree with you that to some extent this increases demand for dollars. If you have to start buying oil and, you know, metals and rare earth, you know, in dollars, I see the expansion of demand that could add some number of years. I still think I agree with Tony, though, that the inflationary effects of the dollar are still going to be in full swing. While I am fully and confidently opposed to everything that's happening, I think in the short term there could be benefits for Americans. I don't think that outweighs, first of all, the moral case against this, but maybe more importantly, the long term implications. We've had our beefs with Russia and Iran for a long time, for example. Until a couple of weeks ago, most Americans, I don't think, knew where Venezuela was on a map. They might have said South America, but they couldn't have pointed it out, you know, on an unlabeled map. And so it gives almost this precedent of being able to invade and occupy and remove from power the president of any country who has something that we think we need, and a pretty poor justification, you know, drug trafficking to be the excuse for doing so. And then obviously it also makes the JP Morgans of the world that much more powerful, because they're going to benefit from these sorts of deals that we're describing here. So it's a crazy time. There's a lot of nuance. I'm sure that there are smart people who could make a compelling case against everything I said, but I think we're just going to have to wait and see. Alrighty, guys, the interesting thing to all of this, I made this joke offline, if President Trump or if President, you know, Biden had been kidnapped by a foreign invader and hauled away, our stock market would be a wreck. In Venezuela, however, they ended their day up 17% yesterday as markets react to the U.S. capturing their president. Tony, I'll let you take this one first. What's your reaction?
This is sort of like expected, because I guess you have a lot of local hatred towards the Venezuelan president, and the fact that, you know, he's gone now, people are celebrating. And, you know, this is like good mood numbers that you see on the screen. But I don't think any of them are really zooming out and trying to understand, you know, what the global and strategic implications of this event is about, right? So, I mean, this uptick right now, I personally think will be short-lived. Give it a day, maybe two, you'll find it, you know, come back down to where it was before this hoopla took place.
Gru, what do you think?
I think the whole deal with Venezuela, I think it's very likely that the whole experience was scripted. You know, that Maduro knew that at some point he was going to get plucked. He might not have known when, but I think the stock market is just highlighting the optimism. Things are going to change for the better. And I don't think it goes any deeper than that. I agree with Tony. I think this could be short-lived. But I also think that, you know, these events that happen, especially when they're unexpected, they don't happen just spontaneously. You know, there's a lot of planning. There's a lot of thought behind it. And not just from the military aspect, but from the geopolitical blowback. I think that the whole thing could be a complete farce, and we're just going along with the story, you know, buying the narratives that were being sold without really the ability to think clearly and understand what's going on in Venezuela today. So I agree with both of you guys where you say, like, let's wait and see. And I also think it's funny. We're all Venezuelan oil experts now, as I look at my X timeline and other platforms on social. But the truth is, we're kept in the dark on so many things that it really makes it difficult to think critically or form an opinion about all of this.
I completely agree.
The thing is, you have to wait until you have the folks that'll do the research, that'll go down, you know, the million and one rabbit holes, and will come out, you know, with the facts to detail what all of this was about. For all we know, this guy could have been put in there, you know, by the U.S., or the U.S. had knowledge of his existence. And this was all just like part of a big act, right? And now all of a sudden, like, okay, well, now your time is up. You know, let's move on to the next stage of whatever big plan we have. Because when you have the world, you know, run by lawlessness, which is, you know, exactly what I think has been going on forever, and is governed by power, and by power, I mean guns, these are the stories that you read about, right? And so up until today, where, you know, those that had the resources to fund, you know, that power were always dictating the rules. So laws, international laws, are an illusion. They're all bullshit. They're all lies, because clearly something like this should have never taken place if you care about, you know, nation sovereignty and what have you. But yet, you know, just, you know, somebody waltzes in overnight, takes over a country, and it's like, all right, man, party on. This is the world that we're in, and up until, you know, we had a competitor to the resources funding this insanity, nothing was going to change. And so maybe this is just like short-lived. Maybe these are like desperate attempts to try to kick the can longer. But the world understands now that there's a neutral asset that exists out here, right? You know, Bitcoin. And maybe not a lot of folks really understand, you know, how big of a deal this is. But, you know, as things continue to decay in the way we're reading about, it's going to force people to start, you know, questioning everything they've ever known. Even the most stubborn individuals, you know, will finally start asking the right questions, and, you know, things will change. The biggest mistake I see the U.S. made that now you cannot undo is the weaponizing of the U.S. dollar. Everybody knows this now. And so they know this, their turn can come at any point in time. So there's a, that's why I said earlier that I don't think de-dollarization is going to slow down. No one wants to be, you know, put in a position where they have a gun to their head and forced to do something that they don't want to do now that there is a viable option available to them. It's as simple as that, as far as I can see.
I think all good points raised. The let me step back just for a minute, highlight something I think you both have said, Greer in particular emphasized, and that is right now we have sort of a mainstream narrative, you know, we were there for drugs, we were there because of, you know, humanitarian reasons. And then you have more, you know, what I'm saying is more conspiratorial, we're there for the oil, the raw, you know, raw materials, resources. And I think over the coming weeks and months, we're going to have new sort of nodes of information emerge as independent investigators and journalists figure this out. I think it is important. I have my base case today based on what I do know and what I tend to be skeptical of, you know, in terms of mainstream narratives. But over time, we're going to learn more. We're going to have new perspectives. And I think that's when you can maybe solidify your opinion on everything going on. My constitutional opinion on this is pretty firm because I have read enough of the founding fathers and understand what their position was on these sorts of engagements. All righty, guys. Last up on this particular subject, but according to BRICS info, the BRICS info account, BRICS News on X, just in, United States sent warnings to governments of Mexico, Cuba, and Colombia that their countries could be next, hours after the Venezuela operation, Axios reports. So I have no, I can't verify this claim. I don't know. However, I know that there are a lot of resources in these other countries. They're of strategic importance. Mexico, obviously, we've talked about with, you know, drug cartels. There are other potential reasons why we might address a place like that. I would be curious, Greer, as an American, what your thought is. Do you think this is real? Would you anticipate this? Would you add Greenland to the list? Parts of Canada potentially to be annexed? What do you think?
The threat is absolutely real. You know, Trump has told each of these governments, yeah, you're next. We might be thinking about it. We might do something very soon, is what he said to Mexico and Cuba. So I think if you are a leader of those countries, taking Trump seriously is probably a wise decision. Whether or not any of that happens, of course, we won't know. But I think with what the pattern that you're starting to see emerge is that the U.S. is looking to control the Western Hemisphere. It's as simple as that. Marco Rubio said as much, you know, during an interview that we want to control the Western Hemisphere instead of our adversaries and our enemies controlling it. So I think that this is going to be, you know, really the method going forward. What parts of the Western Hemisphere can the U.S. either coerce, find diplomatic solutions, trade deals? I think Greenland is on the list. There are reports this morning that Trump and his administration are working directly with Greenland's leadership and bypassing Denmark. And I, you know, Trump has been very vocal. He first brought it out as a joke, you know, hey, we'll go take Greenland, but I think it's very serious. So, you know, I wouldn't fade any of these proclamations. And I think I hear where you're saying constitutionally, you know, this is not what the Constitution has outlined, but I would also point to some of the manifest destiny of what original Americans believed. And America itself is a conquered land. We conquered the enemies, whether they were Spanish or French or Indians, and America took them over. So, you know, I would never advocate for violence. And I agree with you. I think invading sovereign countries is going to come with repercussions. But I also know that, you know, when you have something moving that's this large, this powerful, with this much corruption and violence, it's best not to ignore it. And I think really just all we can do is observe, right? My opinion is not going to influence any of the outcomes, but I want to learn as much as possible so that, like you said, Michael, when we get more information, I can form an opinion and have that influence the things that I believe. And I think we're just living in the sort of the fog of the situation right now that I think will continue for the short time.
I think that's well said. Tony, do you think, I'm wondering if you think over the next couple of years, if we're going to see the United States basically expand its borders in some capacity, or do you think it's going to be, you know, we're just going to sort of invade, get access to resources, make deals, you know, how do you view this taking place?
Well, I think this is, that seems like, you know, like a real life version of Risk, you know, and you've got, you know, a lot of crazy people, you know, in control of whatever the next move is going to be. If they're going to do this, I think they should do it, you know, relatively soon, you know, while they still can, because, you know, the more time passes, the less likelihood of something like this being successful. But again, you know, there's an expiration date to all forms of bullying. You know, the world today isn't the same way it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So what was, you know, no big deal back then, today, you know, might have, you know, an unexpected outcome that no one is, nobody sees coming. But, you know, I'm still of the opinion that you can't go out there in the world and assume, you know, that you just own the entire planet and plunder and pillage and not expect this to come find you back at home one day. And that is not a scenario I'd like to see, not in the United States. Absolutely not, because that really is, I think, would probably be the most horrific movie you've ever seen.
All righty. I think we got to move on. But for everyone listening, thank you for allowing us to share our geopolitical expertise with you today on Venezuela and other current events. All righty. So Tim Draper tweeted, he spoke at an artificial intelligence conference in Shanghai. He said his major points were, I'm just going to bullet these real quick. AI and Bitcoin are merging faster than anyone expected. Bitcoin will create a decentralized economic system. Robots and AI will work alongside humans. They'll earn micropayments for their labor, and they won't be accepting dollars or any government currency. They'll be taking micropayments digitally and will become part of the social economy. And he tells founders of companies, adjust accordingly to this future. So, Tony, our resident AI guy, what do you think about that? It's an interesting thesis.
I completely agree with him. I mean, I think we're definitely headed towards that world, you know, that deflationary world, and it's going to be powered by, you know, deflationary money, Bitcoin. Now, I don't know how, if the robots themselves are going to be earning any money, accepting micropayments, I guess, to render services, you know, maybe, who knows, like how that's going to play out. But walking towards a world where, you know, human beings, you know, have a lot more time on their hands because everything is, you know, being provided for them. At one point, you know, I think we've mentioned this earlier, money will become less and less relevant because, you know, if everything is provided for free, like, what are you going to spend it on, right? Like, now, I don't know what the timeline for something like this is. It's not going to be immediate, but I don't like rule it out, right? And so those that are holding, you know, the big generational wealth, the Bitcoin in self-custody, well, you know, that money is going to be used, you know, in ways that are very different to how, you know, we're spending money now. Those holding Bitcoin in self-custody will become like the future elites of the world. And, you know, like a Bitcoiner in general, their mindset is very pro-humanity. And so we might be, you know, headed towards, you know, that true, you know, Renaissance type of world where people with a lot of purchasing power are determined to really upgrade every aspect of life. And so I'm very bullish and optimistic on that future. I hope we get there, you know, sooner rather than later. But AI is definitely going to be like a massive part of it. And there is no controlling it. For all those delusional enough to think that the government can stop this in the same way that some people think the government is going to stop peer-to-peer money, it's not going to happen. That, you know, that ship has sailed. But again, you know, technology in the right hands will produce good, and technology in the stupid hands will produce something very bad. We just hope there's more good than bad out there in order to, you know, to move towards the world we want to live in.
Greer, how do you feel about this?
I don't think AI is going away, and I know for a fact that Bitcoin's not going away. So ultimately, those two technologies will merge. I think that that's the logical and obvious conclusion to this. So as far as helper robots go and micropayments, I think it's a world that we still have yet to imagine. But I think that AI will want something that's immutable, that's easily verifiable, that is not held by third parties. And Bitcoin is the only money that checks the list. Plus, it's internet native, and it's going to be an obvious choice for super intelligence. And I think, look at Bitcoiners, the vast majority of them are some of the most intelligent people I've ever learned from. And if they're putting all of their their money into Bitcoin, I think a regular average Joe like me is going to make the right decision by following in their footsteps.
I think that's prudent advice. Alrighty, guys, the U.S. Marshals appear to have sold Bitcoin received from the Samurai developers as part of their plea deal, despite Executive Order 14233 requiring forfeited Bitcoin to be held in the U.S. Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. So the court records show about 57 Bitcoin from the Samurai case was sent to Coinbase Prime and sold on November 3rd of 2025. This just came out in the last day or two, I think. So it's not the first time Southern District New York actions in this case have diverged from federal guidance. Go figure. I mean, on one hand, I'm glad to see that the Strategic Reserve still has very little relative to what we had originally thought. However, sad to see that, for the people who are cheering this on, it's they're just completely fumbling this. Tony, take this one away. What's your reaction?
What laws? Again, what laws do you have? If they're nothing more than decorative words on worthless pieces of paper, right? Wasn't this deemed illegal? But it happened anyhow, and everybody moved on. This is what I mean, right? Our entire lives are fabricated. There is no proper guidance to a lot of the things we thought we could trust and rely on. This is just one example of, probably millions of other things that we'll hear about going forward. But, when we reach the end of something, this is the insanity that, that materializes. And so this is very upsetting to read. I mean, yes, I guess, it's good that, the government doesn't have the Bitcoin. But technically, what they did is illegal, and somebody needs to be held accountable for this, no? And so is that going to happen? I don't know. Probably not. Is that right? Of course not. But unless we force the change, this only gets worse. And you're not part of that club. So you're not benefiting from it in any way, shape, or form.
I wonder if this would make, certainly as a KYC'd exchange, Coinbase would be familiar with who their client was transacting, if they would be considered complicit in this. Either way, I think it's this is a good reminder for people, though. I think it was James Madison, one of our founding fathers, who referred to that he was concerned about certain amendments being what he would call a parchment barrier. That's just a piece of paper with writing saying this is how it should work, but there's nothing to stop anyone from doing anything otherwise. And I think the same is true. We assume that the government operates in some sort of unison, that this executive order's passed, that everyone in the federal government's going to abide by it. And here we are, they're 57 Bitcoin poorer than they would have been if they'd followed the executive order. Greer, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think this is maybe the best chance for Kiani and Bill to get some awareness. And if Trump finds out that their Bitcoin was sold against his wishes, against the executive order he signed, perhaps this is the thing that will put the Samurai Dev case on his radar. I don't know that he's heard about it. I think maybe he made one mention in a press conference. But if those two have any hope of getting out of prison, I think that this could be potentially something that helps that occur. I think, we can imagine Trump being angry about this and finding out, and then maybe as an act of revenge, releases them from prison. It has nothing to do with the ruling, but it's just one way for him to kind of regain control over this situation. So, we already know that the U.S. isn't going to purchase Bitcoin. They're going to continue to confiscate it and in the future accept it for tax payments. But I, my only hope is that this will somehow help the Samurai devs.
That's a very good take on it. I like that. Okay, guys, we got to run through these last two rather quickly, but Ledger's payment processor, Global E, was breached. Name and contact information were leaked. We've seen this before. Ledger, I don't even know how many data breaches they've had just in the last couple of years since I've been in Bitcoin. But Tony, this is a huge security risk for a physical security risk, potentially for people who are using a Ledger. What is your reaction to another Ledger breach?
I'm not surprised, man. This is their ninth breach. Something like this has unfolded. I personally think this company is completely compromised. I don't even know if this is accidental, probably, maybe, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was, intentional part of something else, but it also highlights the very real dangers of this whole KYC. You know, when you're buying these products, you're providing real information that, you know, at some point you should expect for it to be, you know, widespread all over the internet and, you know, potentially used against you. So this is very upsetting, and I hope more people, you know, react to it properly. In the sense that, you know, if you're going to buy certain products, you know, stop falling for the narratives that, you know, providing real identification is for your protection somehow. It has nothing to do with that. It never had. This is just about, you know, the whole part of the whole surveillance and control mechanisms that are put in place. And so now you're finding out that, you know, they're being used against you. And so if you don't want to, you know, potentially wake up with a nightmare one morning, well, you know, you have to take the measures to stop, you know, going through with these bad habits, like unlearning the lies that you've been fed. And I know it's hard for some people because you automatically feel guilty, or you automatically assume you're doing something wrong or you're going to jail or something of that sort. It has nothing to do with this. You know, this is your life. You need to protect it, because the systems that are put in place are not doing that for you. They were never designed for that purpose. And so this is a good wake-up call. Again, I'm sure it won't be the last one. Avoid these shitty products. You know, we never recommend them. But, you know, they're not isolated to this one company. I'm sure we're going to hear of plenty others that are just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah, I'm empathetic to the people affected. And I would also say this is a good wake-up call to get yourself a real hardware wallet, something that doesn't plug into a computer, that's Bitcoin only. Companies that are doing things right, there are good options out there. Greer, do you have anything to add to that?
I would say if you're a customer, you're part of an open source project with Ledger. And if you've never been a developer but wanted to work on an open source project, you know, all you had to do is be a customer. Now your name, your phone number, your address, all your contact info, that is available and on the internet. So congrats. You know, if that's something that you were looking for, they've delivered. And I think it's just hilarious at this point that anyone would continue to support this company or buy their products. It's been clear for the last, 6 years that they've just had data breach after data breach. So it's a shame to see, and there are definitely ways to purchase your hardware device and remain private.
Okay, so less empathy from Greer. Some hard love for you, everyone.
You should have known. I mean, this is like the sixth one, you know. Fool me once, shame on me.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, guys, last one. So this is just for fun. You can't make this up. This is Unusual Whales. Kramer's, and so Jim Cramer, his inverse portfolio beat Nancy Pelosi in 2025. So he was up, inverse Kramer, the opposite of him, was up 60%. Nancy Pelosi only up 25%. So Jim Cramer is so bad that he can beat people with insider trading knowledge by, if you just do the opposite of what he does, is basically what this boils down to. Tony, I know you've been following Cramer for, you know, tips and tricks to invest in the stock market for a long time. How did you do this year?
This is easy money, man. Easy money. Just listen to this guy. Whatever he says, go the opposite direction. End of story. You know, 9 out of 10 times, you know, you'll do well, clearly.
I couldn't throw darts at a dartboard picking stocks and do this well, you know, under any circumstance, or do this poorly under any circumstance. And for someone to have an inverse Cramer is just hilarious. I hope he's aware of this and, you know, goes to bed every night wondering what the hell he's doing with his life. Greer, what do you think?
Yeah, the open secret is that Cramer is exit liquidity, or the people that listen to him are exit liquidity for the big players like JP Morgan and you know, those other guys. I think if you believe that Cramer was telling you the truth, then you were being foolish. I mean, look at the chart. The chart doesn't lie. And I think it's not that he's accidentally wrong. It's that he's purposely wrong. He's trying to get his audience to buy the stocks that his friends and buddies want to sell. So if you didn't know that, you know, wake up, it's 2026. Everybody should be able to read a chart by now. And I think this is less of a joke and more of a shame of what our system has become. It's totally corrupt. And the fact that we're comparing it to Nancy Pelosi, who has, you know, made some fantastic trades with insider knowledge, just further highlights the corruption, you know, that apparently is never going to end.
I think that's a good place to wrap up, guys. For everyone who tuned in, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it. I would love for you to drop a comment. Tell us what you think about the situation in Venezuela, what comes next, because I don't think any of us have any certainty as to how this all plays out. And of course, stick around for another minute. You can learn about the Bitcoin way, how we can help you with self-custody and everything else that we do. Tony, Greer, thank you guys for the time. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Was awesome, guys. Thank you.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want to back up in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.